Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, do you believe that your dreams have meaning? Do you believe that we can learn from them to help us live a better, more fulfilled life? That they reflect your true heart's desire, or that they can help you release old hurts and pain? Well, in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by two people who do believe that. And in fact, they believe that so much that they've dedicated their lives to archetypal dream work. And as I said, they'll be with us in about 10, 15 minutes. But first, we're going to take a moment to celebrate here, because we talk about this on the show and we have discussed this with a lot of our guests, that it's important to take the time to acknowledge achievements and to celebrate. And sometimes I'm good at that and sometimes I'm not so good at that. But I thought today, you know, about 2 weeks ago, we celebrated our fifth anniversary. It was actually July 29th was our fifth anniversary, but we put a few clips together a couple of weeks ago to celebrate that. And so we're going to acknowledge today Eric Ryder, my right-hand person here who keeps us live every week.
Good afternoon, Vicki.
We're going to acknowledge and recognize that we're now entering our sixth year by one day.
By one episode. Yeah, because we're a week into it, right?
Was July? I think July 29th was our actual.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fantastic.
Yeah, our actual hard start date 5 years ago.
You keep track of the facts and I just run the equipment. But 5 years in, that's fantastic. Or starting our six years. 6 years is going to be great.
Well, we hope so. I have a lot of changes coming up in my personal life. So, you know, I have a lot of stuff up in the air right now. And we're going to see where all those cards fall. I think when you lose somebody that's important to you, you reassess a lot of things in your life. And
of course.
And if we don't, then I don't think we're really honoring, you know, those people that we loved.
Sure.
But so I do have a lot of stuff going on right now, and I'm trying to, you know, figure out where I want to go, what I want to be when I grow up again. No, it's not that bad. But I just wanted to look back a little. We talked a little bit about some of the shows that we'd done a couple of weeks ago, but a couple that stood out in my mind, because we're live radio, and I actually like doing live radio. I prefer doing live radio. Do you?
Most of the time I do, yeah.
Well, you're the one running around with a chicken with his head, like a chicken with his head cut off, if things are going wrong.
Well, you pour all this energy into it and you're just running around, you know, with very little safety net, trying to make sure everything goes as smoothly as possible. And there's something very exhilarating about that. Even when things go wrong, it's like, well, just do this, you know, just do what you can to cover. Stretch this out. Come on. We'll get the guests on in just a minute, you know, and it is exciting. It's exhilarating, but it can also be a little bit exhausting, you know, because sometimes when things go wrong, it's like, oh, no, you know, there's no undoing that, you know.
I think we had a phase a couple of years back now, maybe 3 or 4 years. I don't know. Time goes so quickly, but where we had like 2 or 3 weeks in a row where guests didn't show up. Unfortunately, one of them had died, remember?
Right.
We were sitting thinking, why isn't he coming on the phone? Because he was a regular guest.
He was a regular guest and always punctual, always there.
Yeah, wonderfully punctual. And
very charismatic guy.
Very passionate about what he did. And unfortunately, he had died.
We found out the following week that he had passed away, and it might have been the day that we had the interview. It could have been the day before, but that was sad. And luckily that was the only guest that we've had pass on on us.
But we had those 2 or 3 weeks, we had somebody else who'd had a death in the family, and they had to fly back east unexpectedly. And so, you know, last minute things always happen, and no matter how well prepared you are. And it's just the nature of the beast. But I actually like doing live radio. I prefer the energy of doing live radio. It's a different kind of energy for me.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So I was thinking about a couple of other things that challenged us. And this was a time when I was like, okay, I am done. Because I think this was a time when I'd had a very difficult consulting project and a lot of challenges with a couple of clients who were clashing heads with each other, making my job even more difficult. And then we came in and I was like, okay, Monday shows is, it's going to be a breeze. And you know why? Because we have a professional television performer on air.
Right.
She has her own cooking show. She's going to be great. Do you remember what I'm talking
I
about?
I do remember what you're talking about. Yes.
And what happened?
Well, she wasn't as professional as we had hoped. I believe you're talking about the guest who was actually on the golf course getting in a quick nine as she was being interviewed.
That's my next one here.
Oh, okay.
This one was in a car to the airport. Her publicist, we could only get hold of her publicist. We're like leaving messages. We're live on air now. Where's that guest?
Right, right.
And then she calls back. She's on a cell phone in the car on the way to the airport. And of course, what happened? We dropped the call about three or four times. And and one of the times you weren't here in the studio with me. And I'm like, I don't have a guest on the phone. I don't have a producer in the studio.
Right.
I remember that one well.
Yes. Yeah. That was another case of a seemingly media savvy professional that that really wasn't terribly media savvy or professional in that particular case.
I think she told me to chill out and have a margarita.
I think that was just wishful thinking on her part that that's what she wanted to do.
Oh, dear. So, and then the one you just mentioned, we had a very famous author who actually wanted to be on the show this month again. But we were booked already. But she was actually walking around the golf course when she
That's right. I got those two confused.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was, I couldn't believe it. she was playing golf while doing the interview.
Well, we had a staticky call because it was a cell phone, which, you know, we tell guests you can't use a cell phone. It has to be a landline.
Right.
And they always like go, yes, yes, yes. But
of
then
course,
when we'll you're live on air yes. and they dial in on a cell phone.
Right.
Or we dial them. And
you hear
on
in the background, four.
But we heard a lot of static on there. And so realized she was on a cell phone. And then then I'm hearing all this puffing and down
she's
the microphone
the course,
and so. I remember just sitting there going, are you walking around the golf course right now? And she goes, yes, I am. They made me get out of the golf cart or something.
Wow.
So I asked her very politely, of course, if she'd stop and talk to us. And she did for a couple of minutes, but then you could tell she was walking again. So I think we just ended that early. But those are some of the, you know, that when you look back on them, they're funny. They're not quite so funny when you're live on air. But.
And we put a couple strokes on her card, penalty card there. So.
So anything else that really jumps out at you?
Well, you know, that's with live radio. Those are the two things when guests are on a bad connection or just not there. And we've been lucky that these have been pretty small. Over a 5-year period, the occurrences of that has been fairly small. So we're very thankful to our guests for generally being so well behaved and being very helpful to the show.
We've had some incredible guests, and you know, you have to laugh. It's life, and it teaches you to think on your feet. You know, I worked with the public for many years. You have to really learn to think on your feet when you're dealing with mass amounts of people. So, but I think my favorite times, I was trying to think of my favorite times, and I think it's always when listeners contact me. They just ping me an email or leave me a voicemail or call, you know, my phone, and just say that something we talked about in the show really helped them. And that to me, you know, if we just help one person, I think that is terrific, and that's what it's all about.
Agreed. Yeah, that's always nice because the listener is why you do the show.
Of course.
Because otherwise you're just talking to yourself, which is, you know, which is nice.
Which I used to do when I was 10 in front of the mirror
right.
with a hairbrush.
but yeah, it really does. Move us and make it all worthwhile when we hear from listeners that like what mm-hmm. we do and like the show and get something out of it. I always find that to be very gratifying, and in radio in general, over my career, that's been the most gratifying when I hear from people that sometimes not so nice, but most of the time, very nice.
Yes. So. And I think I maybe shared this story with you, Eric, when it happened, but I was in a terrible rush one day. I had client meetings all afternoon, was running a little late, got stuck in traffic. I had to pick up something from a store. So I run in and I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. And then this lady walks up behind me and cuts in front. And it wasn't her fault. It was the assistant just said to her, you know, what can I help you with? And totally ignored me. All 5'10" of me, you know, I wasn't obviously invisible. And I was about to say, you know, excuse me, I'm first. But I didn't say anything. I just let it go. And then when the second assistant came up and talked to me, I was glad I didn't, because the lady who'd cut in front, you know, inadvertently said, oh, I recognize your voice. You're on the radio. And we listen every week. So I was like, oh, that was a lesson in minding my P's and Q's mm-hmm. and being patient. Because you never know.
I got to say, one of my highlights was actually when I got to fill in for you one time when you were out of the country, and I got to talk to author Gordon Grice, who wrote the book Deadly Kingdom, the book of dangerous animals. And, you know, actually, I remember talking to him wasn't that fun. He was a little stiff, if I'm honest, but I really enjoyed his book. I thought it was well written and funny and very interesting, because a lot of the books out there about animals now are just so much about, you know, how what beautiful creatures they are, and mm-hmm. and they've saved our lives and all these many things, and that's true. But he wrote the other side of the story of all the animals that can kill us in all so many different ways,
right?
Which was a pretty thrilling read. And so even though he was a little stiff when I talked to him, I got to say, I think that was a favorite segment for me.
Yeah, I remember that segment well. I remember the book. It was very good. And, you know, I have to say that, oh gosh, many of our guests, pretty much all of our guests have been wonderful and very professional. And, you know, they've got up in the middle of the night to talk to us if they're abroad. Yep. They've called Robin Benincasa just a few weeks ago, had finished an all-night shift, and she was sitting in a car next to the fire truck because she's a firewoman, doing the interview in her car because she was so dedicated to sharing information. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've just had experience, you know, one after the other like that. And for me, doing this radio show, it's been like earning a PhD. I've learned so much about so many different topics, and I'm going to learn even more today.
Fantastic.
You're like, okay.
I was just going to say the amount of amazing people that we get to meet and spend time with on this show is incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd love to hear more from listeners. We hear it from a lot of listeners, but, you know, it's always great if you haven't reached out to us before, do so, because, you know, it's your feedback that directs where we're heading. And, you know, I've had somebody call me after one show and she goes, you know, I really enjoyed the show, but you didn't ask this question. So I made sure to include that next time we did a similar kind of segment. So I do listen, and I do appreciate you being with us. And you can always reach me at through info@conversationslive.net.
And people can submit questions to you.
Absolutely.
Or upcoming guests.
Absolutely.
As well.
And I do work a lot of my, you know, there are particular shows that I've worked questions of, especially when we do health shows, because we want to make sure we address people's questions direct. And sometimes, in fact, most of the time, people prefer to be anonymous, but if you like us to use your name, that's good too. So we've got lots of great shows coming up in August. As I said, I've learned so much over the years doing radio and investigating, you know, subjects that I wouldn't necessarily investigate myself. And probably today is one of those very topics, because we're going to talk about archetypal dream work. And so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by our two guests, who are the co-founders of North of Eden. And we're going to take a little journey with them. Thanks for being with us. Do stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
OMG! Grammar abuses, no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Spread the word. Your favorite shows are on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Eric's making me laugh here. He's dancing in the studio. Like,
we got. You can't help but dance to Cool in the Gang Celebration.
I know. And we're going to celebrate now with our guest. We were expecting Mark Bregman and Krista Lancaster. Krista's not going to join us today, but that's okay because we've got Mark Bregman.
It's more of that live radio thing we were talking about in the first segment.
That's right. And Mark Bregman is, along with Krista, the co-director of the Center for Archetypal Dreamwork. He founded Archetypal Dreamwork in 1973 and is the co-founder and co-director of North of Eden and the Center for Archetypal Dreamwork. Whoa. Did we tempt fate talking about what can go wrong
about
in radio?
About technical difficulties we may well have.
Okay, that was a big static thing going on there. But Mark is a master of archetypal dreamwork therapist. He's the author of the Deep Well Tapes and many other books. The book that we are talking about today is the, I think it's his latest one. But you know what? I'm just going to bring him on and we're going to let him tell us which is the latest one because I have
The latest book is Flesh Off the Bone.
Flesh Off the Bone. Thank you, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I wasn't sure which one was the most recent, Mark.
Right.
So, as I said to you and our listeners before we brought you on, this is a new topic for me, and so it was interesting to look at the work that you've done, look at the books. I saw some of the DVDs and some of the work that's online, and I'd normally start out with a little bit more about your background, but I think we'll do that in a short while. I want to just start with how you write these books, because you say that the process of writing and teaching and learning about archetypal dream work has always been intuitive for you, that you feel something wanting to emerge, a kind of energy, and then you speak to it. Talk to us a little bit about that process, if you would.
Well, it actually started in a dramatic way. I always start back 1973, but I had a practice and I was trying to work with dreams and using what I had learned in my college years and not doing very well because the material just isn't there. And then, you know, a voice came to me and started telling me what to say to my clients, things I would never say because, A, I didn't understand the dreams enough to know that that was actually part of the dream, and, B, because it was confrontive. And, you know, it's not the way you're trained to say things that, you know, really challenge the person in the way that his voice was telling me to. But I did it. And years and years later, I began to understand what these why I was told to say these things had to do with a hidden meaning of the dream, the hidden intention of the dream that I had no way to understand. And, of course, 40 years later, I not understand it, I teach it. And also a great companion in this has been Carl Jung in a secret book called The Red Book that was just published about 3 years ago. And in all his books that he's written and the 25 books, in The Red Book, he says, this is the one that holds the truth. And in this work, he's talking about descent into the psyche, dealing with past life trauma, and the whole idea of alchemy and transformation. And very hard to read, as you'd imagine,
right,
this kind of stuff. It turns out, you know, this is what the voice has been teaching me to do for almost 40 years. So I've recently begun a blog called Carl and Me. You can get it at carl-me.com. And also all the downloads of the classes that I give that are basically discussions of the Red Book in terms of this work. So it's another way to access this work through a combination of Carl Jung's book and sharing what this work is really about.
Right.
So it was great to have him as, my God, there's somebody else in the world that's actually doing this thing and word for word. So then in the writing of these books, of course, you know, I don't just write the books. We, Krista and I, get together, as has always been, just something comes to me about in my heart, and I just put it on the page, and our editors put it together. It's really a team
thing. So I want to talk a little bit about archetypal dreamer. What do you mean by archetype? I'd like to just get that clarified right up front, I think.
Right. Well, archetype is a really confusing term, and if you follow Jungians who coined the term, they have a completely different understanding of it than we do, and then really the Red Book does. Archetypes are divine, I don't know how to say it except to say divine beings that come to you in your dream. And not all things in your dream are divine. Some are very dark forces. But the archetypes, such as the animus, A-N-I-M-U-S, or anima, A-N-I-M-A, are the two best known, are actually a man and a woman who represent teachers, divine teachers that perform, that are trying to perform a process of unfoldment ultimately to the soul. And they come in dreams as a girl and a boy. Often, when the girl and the boy come in dreams, between the ages of 3 and 9, we always are taking care of them, or we're hating them. Most people are taking care of them, but really, you don't get to be the soul by taking care of the girl and boy. You evolve. The alchemy evolves you so that actually you're the one in the dream being the girl and the boy. So that's how it looks in the dream. How it actually looks to feel into this work and do this work, we would have to take a particular example. And for that, if we had the time and you're interested, I would have Bill or Sue talk about a little bit about how that was for them.
Yeah, why don't we do that? Because I think it's good to give personal examples.
Okay, Sue or Bill, do you want to give an example?
And these are students of the North of Eden.
And teachers as well.
Teachers and students of the North of Eden.
Suscavo?
Hi, thanks for having us on the show.
Sure.
You know, the thing that really has been powerful for me is that, you know, one of the things I've worked with through this work is a trauma that I have from my childhood with my oldest brother. And in that place of trauma, like, the archetypes have come and help me to go into that trauma and through the trauma. So, you know, I've had these beings come and help me face the trauma, because it was a trauma I didn't know I had. It was a sexual trauma with my brother. And when I started the work, I didn't know that I had this trauma. I had dreams of, like, being in concentration camps and being really scared and little. And then as I as archetypes worked with me, they would come and support, give me support. And when I was ready, because I had the support, then I would, then I had a dream where they took me into a moment where my brother wanted to rape me. And it was then that I had enough support to stand in that moment and to begin to work through the trauma.
While you were still dreaming or after the fact?
While I was still dreaming. They were in the dream with me.
And what were the archetypes?
It was a man who was standing with me mm-hmm. while my brother was threatening me.
Mm-hmm.
So I dreamt that I was on the floor and my brother was about to assault me, and there was an animus there with me, a male figure, and he was, he didn't stop him. It was just more about standing with me in the moment of the pain and the fear I had in that moment.
Okay, and wait, are you
of the past?
I know you. I know you're asleep, but in your sleep, are you aware? Oh, I'm dreaming of this situation. You know, sometimes you can actually think in your dream, this is a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in that kind of state?
Mm. I wasn't. I was very much in the dream. I did not know that I was not, it was not a lucid dream. I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm in a dream, I can wake myself up. I was very much in the moment of the dream and in the moment of the trauma of the past and in the moment where the dream had brought it to me in that moment in my dream to give me support at that moment.
Okay, so you're saying the archetype was kind of guiding you through that dream?
Well, standing, yeah, of course, right, exactly. And standing then, with me as I faced into the pain of it.
Okay, and then so when you wake, you're obviously cognizant of that because you're relaying this to us now.
Right.
But was it immediately cognizant? I mean, did it come back to you gradually? How did you feel?
Well, in that particular dream, I woke up pretty cognizant of it. It was a pretty terrifying dream. I didn't really understand what it meant because I didn't actually remember the moment with my brother at that time. So it was pretty scary for me. So I woke up it was one of those dreams where I was I woke up with terror. And so when I brought it to Mark, who I work with, we kind of worked it and unfolded it together. And I got to feel into oh, this happened and I hadn't known it.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you. We're going to take.
Of course, I would just add that it's a step-by-step process. Mm-hmm. And it didn't start at that level. Usually, where dreams start at is the level of our false understanding of our what we feel. We think we feel certain things, but they're really not the deeper feelings.
Okay. Well, Mark, we need to take a quick break.
Sure.
So hold that thought, and when we come back, we'll continue on that vein. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair today, and my guest is Mark Bregman from North of Eden. The book I have and I'm working from is called Dreaming Metaphysical. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Shells and silvery scales and torrents of blue.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
On the next Conversations Live, Vicky talks with the two women who achieved New York Times success with The Nanny Diaries. She'll also talk with New York Times bestseller Heather Gudenkauf about her new release, One Breath Away. Tune in Mondays at noon Pacific to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for more information and dozens of featured podcasts.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Good news, Belgium. We're streamed worldwide at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Dream a little dream on me. Dream a little dream.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Mark Bregman. He's also got some of his teachers from North of Eden with him. His latest book is called, Mark, remind me what your latest book is. Oh, here it is, Flesh Off the Bone. I'm sorry, I've got too much paperwork in front of me today.
Yeah, it's Flesh Off the Bone, Dream Descent Through Past Life Trauma.
There we go. And I've also got the book in front of me called Dreaming Metaphysical, which I've got most of my questions from this book for you today, Mark. But would you just continue with what you were discussing before the break?
So, which is what archetype is, and I guess as Sue said, the idea was that she had to come to a place where she could allow the love in enough to go into her trauma. So that was what her story was about. But previously to that, and years of work prior to dreams, had to break down the false notions of who Sue thought she was. So that was the early work. Do you want to comment to that, like what that work is for you?
For me, the work was about how I had this idea that I was all good and that, I can be a very charismatic person and I had a lot of energy. So I had a lot of, I sort of came into the work thinking, well, I'm good. I'm a writer, and I was writing poetry, and I had sort of this game plan, and I had a lot of energy and force, and it was sort of like a false pride and a false joy. And the dreams really had to work with me around sort of this identity that I had created for myself as a writer, as a poet with a capital P, and how my identity was like hung on that. And, it took a couple of years to break that down.
How are you breaking it down? I mean, I've seen some of the DVD work where mm-hmm. Mark will, you're kind of not, I'm not particularly talking about you, your dream, but where one of the students was talking about his dream and Mark would interrupt and ask questions. Is that how you got to the point where you are now?
Right. So when Mark would work with the dream with me, what he would do is I would present the dream. And before I really knew myself the way I know myself now, 15 years later, I would present the dream from my point of view, from the point of view of sort of like my ego or false ego. And I'd say, well, this is really great. Like, I had a dream of being on this jet ski, and I was like really excited about being on the jet ski. It was one of my earlier dreams. And I kept falling off the jet ski and getting back on, and it was very exciting. And Mark would just kept asking questions like, well, what are you really feeling and what's going on? And what the dream was really about was my fear about being in the water. And I wanted to make about how exciting it was to be on the jet ski. So, like, it's a collaborative process, like in session, and when Mark works with people in strings at our retreats in the group process, it's very collaborative. So, there is a line of inquiry, a line of questioning, so that the dreams can be revealed through that process of asking questions and answering the questions to see what the dream is offering.
Okay.
And see what's underneath maybe the story that the dreamer had. Like, I had this, I had this story that I was just, always excited and always good, and really underneath it, I was really terrified.
Right. Now, my next question is for Mark, because while we're talking about the work, we keep hearing the work of the archetypal dream work. In the book, Mark, you say our choice as adults is, will we go back to reclaim the child self? Because that is the work of the archetypal dream work. Expand on that a little for us, if you would.
Sure. One of the also a lot of confusions about archetypes is people look at them as roles. R-O-L-E-S, so that there's the wise old man, or there's the loving woman mother, or the dark mother, or these kinds of things. And we can never be any of those things. Those are all part of the battle that exists inside. And, of course, as adults, we try to, maybe see ourselves as these kinds of things, trying to be like this superlative conscious being, when all we're really being is covering up our vulnerable girl or boy self, which is the soul. The only thing we can ever be in our dreams really is the soul. So a lot of one of the confusions of dreams and art types is people want to like be the thing that's divine. And what it really is, when you're in the soul of yourself, you can be in a feeling connection to the divine, which is how evolution or alchemy or consciousness raising occurs in dreaming, where you evolve through dreams to become more and more aware of divine love or actually expanded awareness of everything. But it's really the soul that capacity exists, like the 80% of the brain that we don't use. Who uses it? Well, it's the brain of the soul of the girl or the boy. So they have the relationship with the divine, not the dreamer, when the dreamer becomes the child self.
Okay, so we have to have that connection to the child self. Now, you said that you have somebody named Bill with you who maybe could give an example of that.
Sure, Bill. Bill Staines here.
And Bill, again, is a teacher at North of Eden.
Correct.
So you want to talk about the child self in relation to a dream?
For you, yes.
Yeah, so like in my very first dream that I ever worked in a session, I started out with Krista in the work. I had a dream where there were these two boys that are under the water. From my perception, they're drowning, and I'm in full-blown lifeguard mode trying to drag them out of the water. I managed to get one of them out, and I'm struggling to pull the other one out. And at the very end of the dream, I the boy catches my eye, and I see in that moment that he's fine. And in the shock of, like, seeing that moment kind of woke me up. And it really kind of highlighted this dilemma of not being the child, because I was I was in my normal caretaking, wanting to be the hero. I mean, Mark talked about wanting to be the archetype. Well, for a guy, it's like we always want to be the hero. It's like, and that was like how I was a hero in the world. I was always caretaking people, doing social work, doing political work, trying to help people up, and particularly with women in my relationships. I was always trying to find a problem to fix it and make it better, which you could see in the dream, but I'm pulling my soul out of the water when really I was just scared and then projecting that fear onto my child self.
Interesting.
Right, as opposed to being in the child and dying to self and drowning, being in my feelings in the water the way that the boys were.
Right. Now, Mark, you say in the book there's always a split between what the archetype is bringing to us and our ability to understand and receive it.
Right. That's a really clear quote, isn't it? now, what I'm really saying is that inability to understand what the archetype is giving us, actually, I can reverse it as the ability to understand what the dream is giving us comes from the ability to feel a particular feeling. So for Bill, if he was to, what he would have to, and he later did, have to go into the water through subsequent dreams and actually face his fear of the water, it's in the very act of facing his fear that what Carl calls the descent process, going inside the psyche, underneath the mind, going into that fear opens up the capability to learn what the archetype is teaching us. So the inverse position of that is that if we try to figure it out from our minds, we can't do it. And that's that's the point I was making.
Okay. And so I'd like to ask Bill then, when he was going through this experience, the same kind of questions that I asked Sue before. At what point did this resolve his situation, his issue?
I mean, I started the work 15 years ago. Within the first couple of years, I got to see the kind of grosser level of caretaking that I was doing with women. And so some of those issues, I resolved over the first couple of years. I pulled back from some of the things I was doing in the world and in my relationships, always projecting my hurt or my fear out. The longer process of becoming the child was for me a much longer process. It was almost a decade, really. I mean, somewhere in between that, I was learning to be in my feelings, and I would have dreams that reflected that, where I would be in the water. But to really become the child was probably a 10-year process for me to really disengage, particularly from the caretaking that I was doing, the way that I would control relationships through caretaking, was a long, involved process for me.
And are you doing this all through your dream work? Are you making a conscious level when you're awake about how to behave differently? I mean, how does this come together?
Well, actually, we always have a homework assignment, and in the homework assignment, the analyst gives a particular piece of the dream that you would face into something in the dream. So it's always every dream, it's a different homework you do a couple times every hour.
Okay.
And actually, even without having any kind of an analysis process, we often will give people that are just like looking at their dreams, well, what do I do with this kind of dream? What do I do with that kind of dream? We can tell them right on the radio show, well, this is the thing that you might want to try to do. And what that does is, rather than, for example, running from things, if ever you're in a dream, you're running from something.
Yes, me.
Right. So then what you do is you stop, you close your eyes in your conscious life, and you take that moment in the dream where you're terrified and running, and stop running and feel the feeling. And then hopefully the next dream, you'll begin to deal with what those feelings are that you're avoiding by running. Because the issue isn't that you're running from something good or bad. The issue is that you're terrified and you're avoiding that feeling by running. Mm-hmm. The thing with fear, the way to approach fear in your dreams is always to feel it, and then it changes the next dream. A lot of people have recurrent dreams and recurrent themes, and that's because they don't work the dream correctly. If you work the dream correctly, the guides we would give you, even a lot of people say, well, I don't want to see a practitioner. We don't have to. We want to give guidance to how you can begin that process on your own, waking up in the morning just with a fear dream, which is the most common. Go back to that moment of fear and stop running.
Okay.
And that itself is going to make a change. That one thing, if everybody had a fear dream in the world and made that change, the world would start to change. Just that one thing. And that, you know, so anyway, there's a lot of things like that I could share, but that's a great start.
Well, that it is interesting. We're going to take a quick break here, but I think we'll just carry on and take the break at the end of the segment instead, because I think that's a good point. You know, how do people get to change their dreams themselves? I've had recurring dreams for many years, and I'm sure many of our listeners have experienced the same thing. So once we get to that point, and let's say it's that fear dream, we stop, then what's the next level? How do we take that to the next level?
Right, by being conscious of our feelings of fear in the world, and even how we then project it, which means how we take that fear, let's say we're running from a tornado, and in the world we find ourselves having the same fear when we're driving to work. Well, obviously, a tornado isn't chasing us when we're driving to work, yet we feel the same fear. So in that moment in your outer life, you're aware of, oh, my God, I'm feeling this fear with my sister. I'm feeling this fear with my dog crossing the street. Then you go back to the dream again. So, okay, let me feel the fear about what happened in the dream. That's called introjecting, when you take the fear in your outer life and you remember what it was about in your dream. So these are more tools in how to work your fear, not projecting it. And that will give the unconscious the capability to begin to work with you. As soon as we take a fear and we project it into the world. Now, what about if you're really being abused? Let's say you have a dream of your husband is beating you up. And I, you know, the reality of it is he really is, for example. It could be the other way around, of course. Mm-hmm. Then it's a different story. It's the thing you're afraid of is actually happening in the world. You know, and you know what? The psyche's saying, get out of the relationship. You tell somebody that that's happening. So there are those dreams that are really about something that's happening right now. But most times, if we're not being under some kind of a violent attack, most things when we project these feelings are actually from a past life or something in our earlier life when we were a child. And then we make it about everything else in the world. We project it on their husbands and wives. We think these feelings are current in the world. Of course, sometimes they are. Like I say, if we find that people that are abusive that abuse us earlier, then we're living the same abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But often we're not. We have this anxiety, and it makes us do crazy things and compulsive things. So really, fear is a real huge step to feel. Another one, to also for your listeners to be aware of, is pain. It's another hot feeling that we don't like to feel, and it's another feeling that we often project into the world. When people hurt our feelings, we get really angry, or we shut down, or we. And usually it can just be something minor. Somebody can look at us the wrong way in some cases, and we're already hurt. Well, actually, we're already hurt. And so a lot of times by avoiding our hurts, then we, in the world, we're always feeling hurt. But it's not about the things in the world. It's about something else. So the dreams will deal not just with fear, but the other favorite thing it wants to deal with is our hurt. And that may have come from an entirely different experience in a different life. And what we call these dreams regressive dreams, when they're dreams that aren't in a metaphor or related to real things in the world. And you can always tell a regressive dream because it's always dressed up in the time of that time. In other words, the clothing and the architecture will be very much prevalent in that dream. And usually dreams, not always, but usually dreams that have a different setting or a different place in the world with a different time setting often can be a thought of as potentially a dream that references a memory, an actual memory of a particular life that this happened in.
Interesting. I want to ask you very quickly, because we're almost at the end of our segment, Mark, about letting about the ego, because we're often told, you know, let go of the ego. We shouldn't have an ego. You say the ego is necessary because it's a field of consciousness that evaluates and makes choices.
Exactly. We don't want to. You didn't have the ego, you wouldn't be self-aware, and then we would just be like, you know, I mean, we wouldn't be aware of ourselves. It's a really big step in consciousness of life that we have an awareness of ourselves. We look in the mirror, what am I looking at? And there's all these feelings that we have that other animals don't necessarily have in that complex way. What's really important about it is that the ego is capable. It's a wonderful thing of finding its home. It's capable of what Carl calls descent, which he called the spirit of the depths. If the ego can descend through the dream work by moving through its feelings, it is a really important, it is the necessary way of finding our home, finding ourselves, finding our souls. And then the soul becomes part of the ego,
mm-hmm.
which is what it wants. But if we project everything from inside out, then and we react, then that kind of ego is not healthy. It's not the ego that's the problem. It's how we deal with our feelings that makes ego the problem. So, yeah, we would never say get rid of the ego. You would like, my God, how could you live without an ego?
Makes sense.
Like living without a stomach or your heart. You need these things. It's just that we don't understand what the ego is and why it gets lost or what its purpose is, because we become overwhelmed by feelings we don't understand. Once we understand our feelings, as the dream shows us, the ego plays a wonderful part in our own consciousness of self.
Right, right. And a lot of your work, it wasn't based on the Red Book by Carl Jung, because this has only recently been published.
Right.
But he says the intention of dreams is to free the soul. Is that how you would sum it up to?
Totally. Right.
Okay. And I want to just point out, because we've talked a lot about therapy in the beginning of this, that you're not a licensed therapist per se. How would you describe yourself?
We describe ourselves as spiritual dream practitioners who we have a technique that I hope at some point will be acknowledged worldwide as a legitimate way to work with dreams. But yes, it's just like Carl in his work, the work that he did was outside of the analytical work that he taught. So it's you know, I don't know what kind of word you put on it, Gnostic or shamanistic, or just query, just asking the question
right.
of what the dream's intention is.
Right. Well, we're right at the end of our segment. We ran through the break, so we could continue with you. Thanks for being with us, Mark Bregman.
Well, thank you for having us.
And listeners can find out more about Mark Bregman and Crystal Lancaster's work at northofeden.com. And, of course, he was joined there by Bill and Sue, a couple of the teachers with him. So thanks. We appreciate you being with us. We have to run to break real quick. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick & Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Made fresh each day for you. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Okay, welcome back, and we're going to be flying off here real soon too. But we've just had our first show in our sixth year, and that was kind of, you know, an interesting subject for me. What did you think, Eric? I've never been exposed to archetypal dream work before, and
this is the first time I've heard about it. But it does sound interesting. I like the idea of you know, using your dreams to kind of change your reality. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah, it's really funny, too, because a few weeks ago I mentioned to a friend that I have a recurring dream.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, next time you have the dream, ask where you are, because I don't know where I am. And just ask where you are. And I said, why? And she goes, just ask where you are. But I haven't had the dream yet, so I can't tell you if it works or not.
Right. Well, I mean, but you can't always, I don't think you can always take control of a dream like that, you know?
I mean,
at least when I'm dreaming, I don't necessarily think, well, this is a dream, so I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. It just kind of happened. So
there are times when I'm having a scary dream and I'll go, you know what? It's just a dream. Wake up. And then I dream I've woken up, but I haven't. I'm still in the dream.
Right.
It's a very complicated kind of thing when you start looking at it. And, you know, Jung had some interesting points in his book. We didn't talk about that too much today because this is the kind of work that Mark Bregman's been doing for almost 40 years. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, kind of interesting.
Well, they talk, and I know this is just theoretical at this point, but I understand that they're starting to develop this, and this seems way off to me, but very interesting. Something that may be able to record our dreams, so we'll be able to see them later. So which sounds like something straight out of science fiction, but I understand they're actually working on the concept. So
they are.
It'd be very interesting.
I was watching a show the other evening, a British show. They're doing a lot of work on it in England. So, yeah, it's very interesting. Who knows where it's going to take us? Anyway, we are at the end of our show right now, and I hope you'll join us next week. We're going to talk to some New York Times best-selling fiction authors. Still plenty of time to get your butt down to the beach and have a nice, relaxing hour or two, because you deserve it. We all work hard, and sometimes we forget to, you know, take a couple of hours and just go off by ourselves with a good book. So we're talking with a couple of New York Times bestsellers, and then later on in the month, we're going to talk about the big idea. If you've ever had a big idea and somebody's taken it at work and not given you credit for it, or if you have a big idea and don't know how to process it, then we'll be joined by Sylvia Henderson, who specializes in this kind of work. She's going to talk about that.
I had this dream, this idea for recording my dreams with a VCR or something, and now somebody's taken it.
There you go. All right, we're way at the end of our show. I have to run. Thanks for being with us today. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong. And if you have comments or feedback on today's show, give me a call, 800-495-7617, or email info@conversationslive.net.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.